What is a not jokes?
A not joke is when we're trying to make fun of something, and what we do is we make a statement that we pretend is true, but at the end we say not, which means it's not true.
So teach me how to make one.
All right. What color is your suit?
This suit is gray.
Gray. I would call it blue, okay?
It's gray.
All right, it's blue-gray, but it's certainly not black, right? All right. Let's say it's gray, but it's not...
It is gray.
Okay, so a not joke is, I would say, that suit is black. Not.
This suit is not black.
No, not has to be the end.
Okay. This suit is black not.
This suit is black. Pause. You know what a pause is?
Yes.
This suit is black. Not.
This suit is black. Pause. Not.
No, you don't say pause. This suit is black. That's a pause. Not.
This suit is black.
Okay. I'm not.
Pre-recorded live from Pennsylvania and Nebraska, U.S. of A. It's the Bob and Elvis Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Elvis Dingledean.
I do not for one think that the problem was that the band was down. I think that the problem may have been that there was a Stonehenge monument on the stage that was in danger of being crushed by a dwarf. All right? That tended to understate the hugeness of the object.
I really think you're just making a much too big a thing out of it.
Making a big thing out of it would have been a good idea.
Nigel gave me a drawing that said 18 inches, all right?
I know he did, and that's what
now,
I'm talking
whether
about.
Whether he knows the difference between feet and inches is not my problem. I do what I'm told.
But you're not as confused as him, are you? I mean, it's not your job to be as confused as Nigel.
It's my job to do what I'm asked to do by the creative element of this band. And that's what I did.
The audience were laughing.
So it became a comedy number. I mean,
yes, it did. Yes, it fucking well did. And it was not pleasant to be part of the comedy on stage. Backstage, perhaps it was very amusing.
Maybe we just fix the choreography and keep the dwarf clear.
What do you mean?
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality. The Bob and Elvis Show.
We are back. Bubble Genius Bob and Elvis Show, brought to you exclusively by thebubblegenius.com. No, it's bubblegenius.com. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius at www.bubblegenius.com. Oh my God! So yeah, we've been away for a couple of weeks. So, here's our excuses.
Spring break.
That's right. We're in Daytona, having Jello shots and Milwaukee's best, driving our dune buggies up and down the beach. What happened was. I had to go away, and I completely forgot to mention it on the show. I mean, I had to fly back to Pennsylvania in this very complicated ordeal to go to my old house and to gather the remains of my belongings.
From the lawn?
From the lawn, yeah. And to either... store them or to ship things back. So what I ended up doing is when I flew back, I rented an SUV, a very lovely Ford Escape, which was actually a very nice car. Gas guzzler. And I'm bad liberal for renting the Ford Escape. So I loaded it up with everything I had, basically all that remained of my stuff, could fit into a Ford Escape.
All your bowling trophies,
yeah,
and various knick-knackia.
Bowling trophies. What I did was I filled up three boxes of my DVDs. I just got all of my DVDs, put them in, filled up three giant U-Haul boxes, and shipped them parcel post, the U.S. Postal Service, to myself. So they're on the way, all of my DVDs, and then there was some room in the third box for some other stuff. So I got some stuff shipped here, and then the rest of my things, I was able to find a small storage space, so I stored them.
Ah.
And
there in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. It was like, so pathetic. It's like a 5x5 little miniature storage space.
Didn't know somebody with a closet.
Yeah, that, and that's it. Well, that yeah, that's the problem, though. I mean, it's like, you know, it was just too. It was just barely too much to actually, you know, impose on someone, right?
Yeah.
So I had to rent a very small storage space. And
is that where the dog is, in the very small storage space?
See, the dog. And included in the Ford Escape was my dog, my Australian Shepherd, so I, who I traveled with back here to Hawaii.
So he's out of, he's been quarantined and vetted?
Yeah, so that, I mean, that was a whole process. This state, because it's an island state, is it boasts its rabies-free status. So in order to get a dog or a cat into the state, you have to go through literally what turns out to be a 120-day process. Mm-hmm. So you have to get, you know, rabies vaccines and blood tests and a microchip, and then you have to wait for a period of time before you can actually bring the animal in. Then you've got to have health certificates and all kinds of paperwork.
The long form birth certificate.
Yeah, it's like, you know, declaring a salami getting into the former Soviet Union or something like that. It's it's impossible to get a dog into the state of Hawaii. But it worked. I mean, I successfully did it, but it was, you know, it was quite an experience traveling with a dog in a giant crate, because I mean Australian Shepherds are quite large. And so I had the big crate, and then I flew halfway to Los Angeles to let the dog go to the bathroom and everything like that. So I had to actually do the whole process twice.
Mm. Wow.
So that was my ordeal, and it was, you know, as you can possibly imagine, in a divorce scenario, quite stressful. Because you have to go back to your old house and see your old stuff and get all those things gathered like a refugee. I was just like slamming stuff into that Escape, like, oh God, do I get my my Pennsylvania Flyer train set? Can I find room in the SUV for the train set? So yeah, so I was able to get everything that I possibly wanted in there. And, you know, of course, you and I have been talking about this for months now, is the whole idea of downsizing, which is what, you know, it was good to have that physical restriction to say, you can't take any more than what can be crammed into this rental vehicle.
Right. That's good. That's a good thing.
Yeah. So I was able to get all of my books, my political books, all of my Civil War books, all of my miscellaneous books. Those are in the storage space. I was about to ship those because those weigh about, as I'm sure you're aware, about 1,000 pounds is like a single box of books.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what I've been doing here. I've been, just fighting myself with my many, many voluminous books and hauling them willy-nilly over to the Half-Price bookstore and taking money for them. So,
yeah.
Really sad.
But I saw some interesting movies on the plane. I saw because it's a total of about 10 hours of flying time each way, mm-hmm. and that's not including layovers. So I was able to see like Gulliver's Travels. I saw with Jack Black. It was like, here's Jack Black being Jack Black, except he's gigantic.
Yeah, even more Jack Black.
Yeah. And then, of course, he does all of the, you know, rock opera, you know, overperforming and you know, it was awful. And then there was then I saw The Tourist, which I couldn't stand it any longer than about 20 minutes.
Wow.
And I was just like, oh,
yeah,
this is
horrible reviews.
Yeah. That was the Johnny Depp Angelina Jolie thing. And then, let me see, I saw, you know what was actually good is How Do You Know? I would never have gone to see that movie in the theaters. That was the Paul Rudd, Reese Witherspoon, Jack Nicholson romantic comedy thing directed by James L. Brooks. And I never would have gone to see that in the theater. But then, you know, when I saw it on the plane, of course, all of the F words were changed to fudge, which was hilarious.
That's lame.
Mother Fudger and Mother Father and, you know, stuff like that.
Wow. I don't think it was,
But it was actually quite good.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it was basically all of those people playing themselves, which is very
Paul Rudd always plays himself.
Yeah, Paul Rudd playing himself, and then there was Owen Wilson playing Owen Wilson.
Oh, Jesus. But he's so annoying.
As a professional ball player. But So that was that. And then last week we were getting ready to do the show. I mean, I swear to God, we were planning to do the show. We were all set to go. I had recorded the bits that you heard at the top of this show. I had them, you know, set to go. I found them. I was ready to roll. And then I recorded them. And then I went to save them to my work hard drive, this massive hard drive. I have two desktop computers and a laptop. That's my array of computers. And they're all networked together. And they're all team viewered together. So I can, you know, I can basically control all of my computers through my laptop. It's really convenient. So I went to save these files onto my massive hard drive that I use for animation. I use it for the radio show, just everything. Wouldn't save. So I said, well, maybe that particular computer has shut off. Okay, so go in there, go to restart. It restarts. The drive is completely missing. Mm. And so it's just showing a C drive. Mm. And then my backup external drive. Mm-hmm. And so no drive. So I'm freaking out. I mean, everything I had that I needed was on that drive. So, and that's maybe 5 minutes before the show's ready to start.
Yeah, it was.
So that was it. I just had a major computer meltdown. Fortunately, I had subscribed about a year ago to one of those online backup services. I'm not going to say which one, but it's one of the ones that sadly also advertises on the Glenn Beck Show.
Oh, no.
Bad liberal. I'm a bad liberal.
Yeah, that's two strikes already.
Yeah, I had an SUV, and I'm... But, I mean, you know, I mean, let's be real. I had a comparison shopped, and it was between, you know, the Glenn Beck online backup service, which is not really... They advertise on Glenn Beck sometimes. Or it was the other one, and this one happened to be the best of the two. So I had to go with that. I was going to trust my files to just anyone. It was going to be the one that has the best service. Mm-hmm. And so what I had to do is, you know, the whole ordeal of buying a new hard drive, putting the, you know, opening up my computer, which is always kind of a scary thing to do because it's like performing surgery. I'm afraid that, you know, maybe there's going to be a static shock from my finger and then the whole thing is going to zots out. And so I bought a hard drive. I bought a 1 terabyte hard drive, mm-hmm. and replaced the shitty one with this 1 terabyte hard drive. Went to my online backup. Everything's there. Started the backup. I backed up the folders that I usually need, like the folder for this show, and a couple of a couple of writing folders. I got those right away, and so those are already backed up. But then the rest of that hard drive, the former hard drive, is now backing up onto this brand new gigantic hard drive. Right. So all's well that ends well. Yeah. Oh yeah. Still, it's, you know what? It took literally 5 months to upload all of those files. There's over a million files.
Good lord.
Over 500 gigs of files.
How much did How much does that cost a month for cloud storage?
$50 a year.
What?
$50 a year for complete.
For that much space.
For complete and total peace of mind, yes.
Holy shitballs.
So, suffice to say, I always take the opportunity to then organize all my whole backup scheme because I like triple redundancy backups. Because I've just lost so many things. In college, I had a Smith Corona word processor with little disks that I was writing a science fiction book, lost all of it to these little desks.
Writing a science fiction book.
Yeah. And
what was it about?
It was about...
Spaceships.
It was about this penal colony where instead of imprisoning a penal, they used psychological manipulation where they actually had these little brain implants that forced the inmates to see hallucinations that kind of jarred them out of their psychoses and things like that. It was just really weird. It was a really, really weird book. Maybe it was good that I lost it. And then I made an independent movie the early part of last decade about 9/11 and the war in Iraq and all that stuff and all the patriotism. And I had it all backed up on a Lacy hard drive, lost it, lost all of it. But fortunately, I have DVDs of it. But if I ever wanted to go back in and fix the edit, I'd never be able to do it because it's gone.
Yeah.
It's gone. So suffice to say, I'm insane. I'm OCD about backing up. And
I'm exactly the opposite.
Really? You're terrible about it?
I've got like a memory stick and like an SD chip that maybe every now and then I'll back some shit up on, maybe. like I'll copy something, but I'm just not a backup guy.
It's like visiting Haiti without condoms.
Bad idea jeans.
Exactly. Are you ripping up all the plumbing and the flooring and redoing all the electrical? Yeah. You're renting, right?
Yeah. Bad idea, Gene.
Yeah. It's always a nightmare when something like that happens, even if you have the safety of it. And we're all just test pilots for this technology anyway.
Yeah.
But, I mean, can you imagine? This is what I always think about. Can you imagine being like maybe a 60-year-old man, you know, just buying a computer for the first time, and convinced to buy a PC. And you sit down with that PC and using and going on the internet for the first time. Can you imagine that experience? Can you imagine how royally fucked that person would be?
I don't know. Do you think it'd be that difficult? I mean, now everything is geared towards that market, really. I mean, it's, you know, I think it's almost harder for us to unlearn stuff and I don't know. Maybe it's hard. Fuck 60-year-old people. They should stay off the internet anyway.
Yeah. What's there
to do for a 60-year-old on the internet?
Well, they're going to go on the internet and they're going to get a variety of viruses. They're going to start circulating viruses to you.
Yeah.
Their computer is going to melt down because
then they'll call us, you know, their sons right. for tech support.
Yeah.
That's what pisses me off. Like every year my dad gets a new, I hadn't had a new computer in fucking forever. My desktops are all cobbled together, Frankenstein machines from like six different boxes with shit just crammed all in there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I always get a pretty nice laptop through work, so that's typically just the one I use. But my dad gets a new one like every year, and all he fucking does is email and play like word games online. I mean, just does nothing with this raw power. This computer, he got a Mac for fuck's sake. There's like this powerful, super powerful Macintosh in his office that he uses to make greeting cards. I'm like, oh my God, Dad, you have no idea what I could do with this fucking thing. And you use it to print out fairly crappy clip art greeting cards once every 3 months. It's like, well, yeah. Just hurry up and die so I can have that.
right. Well, you know, I think it was 1997. I bought my dad a web TV unit.
Oh, good Christ.
And remarkably, I mean, he actually started to use it. I mean, I'm like the guy who buys my dad technology that he doesn't use.
I used to do that, too.
He's got a VCR that he's never used that I bought for him. He's got a CD player I bought for him that he's never used. I mean, never. And I bought him several years ago. I famously bought my dad a Sirius satellite radio because at the time we both owned Sirius stock, mistakenly.
Oh.
And so I thought, well, you know, he likes a radio. It's pretty Adwater and Serve to listen to Sirius. So I bought him a Sirius satellite radio, and he comes up to me after the sort of the gift exchange and says, you know, Bob, I'm never going to use this. And it was like crushing. It's not a very good story about my dad, actually. But he said, you know, I'm never going to use this. So here you go. Here's it. Here's this radio back. I'm giving it back to you.
Yeah.
Like, wow. Okay.
It's like, yeah, Dad, really? You're never going to use a radio?
Yeah.
It's a radio. This is technology that your dad had, Dad.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just better now. You turn it on and you listen to music. What the fuck? How difficult is that?
Well, and it came from a place of fear. This was not my dad being an ass. Sure. I mean, this is legitimately frightened of this thing that would then be festooning his vehicle.
Yeah,
and so he gave it back. So that, but the web TV he continues to use. So now,
that blew right past me. He's still using web TV.
He's still using it through a dial-up connection.
Web TV exists.
Yes,
still?
And they still make little updates for it. Yeah,
what the
he still
fuck?
Uses it. He uses it
that's like 12, 15-year-old technology.
It is.
There's no way that's still working. It's like running out of some guy's basement. Like there's really like some really sad, droopy man in his underpants is uploading web TV. Like he hacked it. Like the company went tits up years ago.
Yeah.
And it's just this guy.
Yeah. But
that's
sad. Yeah, it's, I mean, Microsoft still runs it. I mean, there's some guy making $50,000 a year in some office somewhere who runs
just
web TV.
Yeah. It was a great idea. I mean, back in the old days when I was with the world's first commercial ISP and installing internet pipes and our customers saying, okay, great, I got this T1 now. What the fuck do I do with it? Back in those days, that, you know, I remember they were trying to get around. They were trying to make standalone internet appliances, you know, internet toasters. That's what we called them, internet toasters. Where because the real expense in delivering internet to, you know, Joe Schmo was an operating system license. This is before the days of, you know, open Linux and stuff like, you know, stuff. No consumer is going to go out and get a open source OS, you know, so they're trying to think, how can we circumnavigate the $1 trillion investment of getting Microsoft licenses? So they were coming up with these little crappy internet appliances that weren't really computers, but they had internet on them, and they never worked, and they tanked out. But our company threw millions of dollars at it, and man, we thought it'd be a great idea. And web TV actually had a pretty good model for a while. You know, hey, it's a TV and it gets web. Wow.
Well, that's the idea. I mean, going back to the original premise of this is that you want to have something that people who are afraid of the technology can just plug in and be on the internet. You just plug it in and you're ready to roll. Now, Apple has been at the vanguard of all of that for years, actually. I mean, and the latest iteration, of course, is I think the iPad, which my brother and I are trying to convince my dad to get an iPad, because it's just so simple to use. It's just you point and you're doing stuff. You touch it and you're there.
Yeah.
Right. But I mean, it's been something that Apple has been stabbing at for a while now, and of course, famously so. This is the original commercial. You remember the. The iMac commercials with Jeff Goldblum.
Oh, yeah.
This is one of my favorite things on YouTube is drunken Jeff Goldblum doing the iMac commercial.
I think the greatest gift of the holidays is internet. I'd say internet. Yes, absolutely. It's of course, as easy as it's always been. You get an iMac, 10 minutes out of the box, you're on the internet. But now Apple gives you your own personal website. You can post your photographs for all your family to see all over the world, and your iMovies. And now you're the purveyor of, you're the generator of, you're the author of great stuff.
Yeah, so that's what they've been trying for all these years, is to have something you can just pop out of the box and then you're on the internet making your iMovies.
That's a brilliant mix, whoever did that.
It really is. If you want to watch it, it's Drunken Jeff Goldblum or Drunk Jeff Goldblum.
I think there's
another one. What's this one here? This is three
pizza. You know how much a pizza costs? About $10. In a month, if you get three, it's $30. The same cost, roughly less. You can own a computer. The iMac is less than $30 a month. Can you imagine, for the same cost as three pizzas, you own a computer? Now you're on the internet, now you're emailing everybody in the world, you're playing the greatest games, you're empowered, your vision is expanded, you're collaborating with people, it changes your life in a million ways.
I mean, that is just so, that's so YouTube. That's just so perfect. I love it.
Yeah. I don't know how they did that.
Yeah, just slowed it way down.
Yeah. Well, it's not just, they worked it a little bit. Like, it's not just slowed down. It's slowed down, then they speed it up a little bit, slowed down. It's I love to listen to Jeff Goldblum talk, though. He's got a real strange, just a very unique pattern to his speech.
Yeah. And one of the great Goldblum roles where he's kind of Jeff Goldblum, but he's not, is in The Life Aquatic,
mm-hmm.
where he plays Operation mm-hmm. Hennessy.
Yeah. Still kind of Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah.
But
still
kind of.
But anyway, so I think eventually, you know, the iPad is going to be that simple. It's going to be that simple for everyone to be able to just be on the internet and have their iMovies.
I want me one of those hard, an iPad. But Jesus Christ, I was in the store the other day, and the iPad 2, the high-end one's almost $1,000.
Is it?
Jesus.
Fucking hell. It was like $895 for the high-end, the tip-top-end iPad 2.
Well, that's why I haven't converted over fully to Mac yet, because I want to get a MacBook, but I want to get the high-end one, which is like probably close to $3,000 to get one that really can do everything I want it to do. And even then, you know, I'm still scared of it because of, you know, I have lots of software that I've purchased over the years, and getting it to work, like, will I be able to use TeamViewer? Will I be able to use Skype? Will I be able to do all the normal things? Will I be able to use, my version of Photoshop that I have, because Photoshop isn't cheap.
Dude, so you just get a PC emulator on it, put a Windows emulator on it.
Yeah.
I know that, like, in Steve Jobs' house, like, there's like what looks like a, to you and me, it looked like a roll of glistening white paper towel, and he pulls it open and it's like a computer screen. Like, he's got the highest tech shit, stuff that won't come out for like 20 years. Like, everything, like, his whole house talks to him. He can walk through walls. He's got like portals, Farcasters. He can zap himself to another fucking planet. I just have a feeling he's got it. Like, him and Bill Gates, like, they could just Farcast each other's houses.
Yeah,
like, they just got all the cool stuff. Like, in Japan, they're like 15 years ahead of us. I'd love to go to Japan.
Right.
And shop their black market. You get stuff on the Japanese black market that's not even out here yet.
Well, I mean, yeah, I had this on the agenda for a while to talk about, but I mean, they've made a basically what's a universal translator for the iPhone.
Yeah, I saw that, where you hold it up to a sign with the camera and it translates it.
Yeah.
That's fucking insane.
It really is insane.
I mean, it blows my mind that it can do that. Yeah. There's a commercial for it or something where this girl's holding up cards mm-hmm. with words written on them.
Yeah.
Like, just handwritten in marker. And she's holding them up and this guy's just holding his iPhone with this app on it. And it's fucking translating everything.
Yeah.
I'm like, what is going on? Mm-hmm. What?
Mm-hmm.
Something's going to happen. We're going to hit like this weird techno tipping point. It's going to be like nanobots or something, where just everything, just all bets are off. Like, people just get infected with technology and their arms falling off and shit. I mean, something's going to happen.
Yeah.
Either at the CERN lab, they're going to figure something out. They're going to do one of their little explosions at the CERN lab. Or Fermi Lab, or whatever the fuck, mm-hmm. and just there's just a big black hole going to open up. We're all going to blink out of existence, which would be awesome. Or the just like nanobots will run wild and infect us all. There's a great book by Greg Bear called Blood Music. It's a great book about this nanoscientist, the scientist working with nanotechnology, and he creates this entire village, like this community of thinking cells, like the little tiny nano machines just injected just with like DNA computers. And the project manager comes in, basically says, scrap it all. We're getting shut down. Government's all freaked out by it. He thinks your results are really freaky. So instead of flushing it down the toilet like he's supposed to, he injects himself with it. He gets his entire little nano community in a syringe and he injects himself with it, and it starts to rewrite. It gets in his DNA and it rewrites him. And he basically just he turns into this bloody goo in the tub.
Yeah.
But not before. Like, every hand he's shaken and every sneeze he's done, it's just out there now. And it just basically rewrites the fabric of everything. It's fucking amazing. That's what I want to happen.
Well,
nanotechnology, cellular rewriting.
What Apple has really done with all of this technology, the iPhone and the iPad, is combined basically intuitive user interfaces with things that we didn't realize that we needed. And I was so resistant to getting a smartphone. I was so resistant to it. And then when I finally did, I'm going, you know, how the hell did I get along without this? How did I get along without the ability to quickly snap a picture of where I parked in a parking garage, or to use the GPS feature, or to send an email when I'm on the road or something like that. Or just even the matter of flying somewhere and not having to lug a laptop onto the plane with me, where I can basically just put my phone in my pocket and the little earbuds in the other pocket and board that goddamn airplane without all of the accompanying bullshit that I used to have to use.
So I was able to a whole entertainment center right there in your pocket.
Exactly. I was able to watch movies. I was able to, to tweet on, sitting in the terminal and, just all that stuff. So
what, have you got an Android?
No, I have an iPhone.
Oh, you've got an iPhone.
In fact, I have a previous generation iPhone. I bought the iPhone 3GS back in September. So I've been using that because I'm waiting for the full 4G iPhone, which isn't available yet.
I swear to God, someday we're all of our brains are just going to melt out of our ears with all this spectrum around us. Like, I was sitting on the couch before the show, I was upstairs, and my wireless hub is in the entertainment center below the TV. So it's with its little antenna pointing out, and the laptop is behind me. I've got Steam. I've got the Steam engine, which is like a gaming engine, on my laptop, downloading. It's synced to my PS3, and I'm pulling Portal 3 onto my laptop via the wireless hub, and I'm just sitting there thinking, all of that is going right through my brain pan right now. All of that data, all of those bits are literally going through my skull right now, and it's 10 gigs. So if someday a doctor's going to come in and say, put up an MRI of my brain and go, you see this little gray patch right here? The reason you can't smell anything anymore and you think your name is Herbert. That's Portal 2. When you tried to download Portal 2 to Steam from your – that just went right through your skull.
Uh-huh.
There's no way that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
With the 4G and the 3G and the Wi-Fi and the fucking satellite and just all this bandwidth. It's amazing we don't have to, push through it. Yeah. Like, we just feel like we're moving against water or something.
Well, it's not just – it's that. I mean, you've got all of the Wi-Fi signals shooting all around. You've got the cell phone signals shooting all around, which I don't know. Yeah. Is it microwaves? What is a cell phone? And then you've got – yeah, and then the just the electromagnetic fields generated by not only the screens but then also the computers themselves, and that's supposed to. I mean, at the very least, if you're subjected to, a reasonably strong electromagnetic field, isn't that supposed to make you paranoid and kind of skits out a little bit? I mean, just in small ways, if you're in an electromagnetic field, I mean, it's got to affect your
balls.
That's
why
some
I wear
form.
Tinfoil underpants.
That's right. That's
right. You gotta outfit yourself in fucking Rayman suits now, because we haven't yet figured out how we're gonna reap the technology that we're sowing here.
I said
we're gonna sow what we're reaping. I can't remember which way that goes.
By the way, I said electromagnetic field like drunken Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah.
Electromagnetic field.
Star Trek nerd.
Yeah, that's right. So, but there you go. Fortunately, everything is resolved here. But I mean, imagine being my dad and confronted with a hard drive that shits out on you.
Oh yeah, that's a 2 o'clock in the morning phone call for me.
That's it.
Yeah. I'm like, Dad, you just throw that one away. Yeah. Go buy yourself a new one.
Right.
That's not something I can walk you through.
No, definitely not. We actually have some politics to talk about, because it is
a
show. Yeah, believe it or not, there's lots of politics, lots of things to discuss, lots of outrage. But first, I want to remind you that today's show, as always, is brought to you exclusively by Bubble Genius at www.bubblegenius.com. It's the best goddamn soap in the world. It literally is. They sent me a gigantic box of soaps. We now are stocked here with... it must have been 20 hibiscus soaps in there, because I'm always talking about the hibiscus soap, which is so great. It not only smells great, soaps up perfectly, but it feels good in your hand. When you actually put it in your hand to soap up your hands, it feels like it actually kind of massages your hand a little. It's great. It's shaped like a hibiscus flower.
Really
good stuff. And then they did send along one of their lawn garden gnome soaps on a rope. which smells like it's actually quite refreshing, even though it smells like mossy dirt. Lots of great stuff happening this week at Bubble Genius in honor of the Easter holiday, and we're going to hear about that right now.
Ouch! My ass hurts!
What?
I said my ass hurts!
Huh?
Aw, geez, someone thought I was a chocolate bunny and took a huge bite out of my ass, and it hurts!
I can barely hear ya! Someone took a bite out of my ears!
Man, I know we look like chocolate, we smell like chocolate, but people can't eat us. We're soap!
Want to fill your Easter basket with fabulous treats that aren't loaded with sugar? Check out all the Easter soap goodies from Bubble Genius, like our Here Comes Peter Chocolate Tail soap, also available in pre-chomped My Ass Hurts gift baskets.
What did she just say?
Vegan and bunny friendly bath and body from bubblegenius.com.
Shove Bob and Elvis into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Elvis Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Make sure to enter Bob and Elvis, B-O-B-A-N-D-E-L-V-I-S, and get 15% off your entire order from bubblegenius.com. Really great.
I got one of those Easter baskets. They're lovely.
Did you buy it for Peanut? Did you get one for Peanut, or did they just send it over to you?
They just sent it over, yeah. Hmm. And yeah, Peanut was like, why is this one say my butt hurts? And I had to show her to tilt the basket a little bit and say, see, it's got a bite out of its ass. And she's like, oh, that's pretty funny.
It's all, I mean, it's... Shh. So, I mean, you've never seen anything like the variety of soaps and bath and body products at Bubble Genius. They've got something for everything. Yeah, very
good. Ooh, and I just thought of a custom soap I'm going to have them make me, because Peanut and I have just been all about the Portal. I don't know if you've ever played Portal. You're not much of a gaming guy.
I used to be, and not so much recently, because I abandoned my video game console.
Yeah, well, years ago... Valve, the great game manufacturer Valve, put out a box set called the Orange Box, and it had three games in it, and one of them was just kind of a throwaway. One of them was like a shooter, and one of them was Half-Life 2, the sequel to Half-Life, and the third one was Portal. It's this amazing, just a cult classic. Mm-hmm. And for years and years, it's one of Peanut's favorite games, if not Psychonauts is her favorite game, but our Xbox crapped out, so we hadn't been able to do that. But Portal is probably her second favorite game, and she's just a genius with it. And it's really complicated. You've got this gun on your arm and this sadistic AI trying to kill you, and you're in this testing facility, and you can shoot an orange portal or a blue portal with this gun. So if you shoot an orange portal and a blue portal, you go in the orange, you come out the blue. So it's basically a wormhole.
Yeah.
You've got this wormhole gun. And my daughter can think in 18 gazillion different dimensions with this thing. She outthinks me on it all the time. And I'm just fascinated by watching her. When it came out, I mean, when she first played, she was like 7. And now so Portal 2 finally came out, and I almost was forced to go down to the midnight opening and have it when she woke up the next morning, but I said, fuck that. So I went while she was at school, and we've just been showing our teeth, you know, just so excited about Portal 2. It's got Stephen Merchant's voice from The Office.
Oh, Stephen really? Merchant. Oh, that's
so
great.
Yeah, he plays a snarky AI that meets an untimely end at the – in the very beginning, but oh my god, it's so much fun.
That's currently my favorite television show is the Ricky Gervais show on HBO.
Yeah, I know it is. You've been playing it. Yeah. And he's got this new thing on HBO coming up, this Talking Funny, kind of like an interview series.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where he sits around with other funny people. So yeah, I recently had to get HBO turned back on because Sunday night was the big Game of Thrones premiere.
Oh, yes.
And absolutely had to be a part of that. My love-hate relationship with George R.R. Martin, the author of the books that this is based on. And I don't really know how the HBO is planning on doing this. I think it's really going to be another Rome where they realize that the cost of it is just too much.
Yeah, same with Deadwood, yeah.
And they're just going to scrap it, you know, because it's the series, the books aren't even finished yet. And I refuse to read them after. So the first one's Game of Thrones, I was in my 20s when this fucking series came out, and it's not done yet.
Yeah.
I was in my 20s. I'm 41 years old, and the fucking thing's not finished yet. So the Game of Thrones was first. Loved it. Loved the hell out of it. And like every day for a year, I went into the bookstore looking for the sequel, and it was never there. And then finally, Clash of Kings. Great book. Loved it. Ate it up. Finally, again, like 3 years later, Storm of Swords. And I got to where I was buying them from the UK Amazon because it came out for some reason. Those books would come out months earlier in Great Britain than they would come out here for some reason. So I'd buy them and have them airmailed to me from Britain. I love them so much. And Storm of Swords kicked my ass so hard. It was so punishing. Just in stress and drama and amazement and oh my god and what the fuck, that I refuse to read anymore until the fat son of a bitch is finished with them. Because I know he's going to have a cardiac arrest. He's going to die. He's going to suffer a massive Big Mac-related infarction, and he will not finish the series, and I will dance on his grave if that happens. I will get him reanimated by some voodoo priestess and force zombie George R. R. Martin to finish those books.
Yeah. You know,
That's a great series. Yeah. You got to go out and read it.
Yeah, I don't feel so bad about my Lord of the Rings fanaticism, which, by the way, the ladies at Bubble Genius always remind me of, that I'm just a colossal geek. But, yeah, I did want to mention that I was able to save my life-size Gollum statue.
Life-size?
It's life-size. It's actually a full – it looks like you sit it up on a table, and it's like Gollum's sitting there in your room.
Gollum from the films?
Yeah, from the Lord of the Rings.
From the Peter Jackson films?
Yeah.
I mean, got like that Gollum.
Fit it into a giant box, and it's now in my super secret.
Why would somebody have something like that?
Because I'm a colossal geek, is what the explanation is. But, So
that out-nerds my Cylon helmet cookie jar.
No. A Cylon helmet cookie jar is phenomenally geeky. We're tied.
No, I think a life size. Where would someone purchase a life size Gollum?
On the eBay is where one would purchase it. And not only did I purchase it, but it was in. I got it on a discount because it was in several pieces. It had broken, and I repaired it, and I touched it up, and I put it all back together, and now it's a perfect specimen of geekery.
Good Lord.
Yeah, I'm a fan.
Well, if you enjoy the Lord of the Rings, the Game of Thrones series kicks that in the ass. Kicks Lord of the Rings in the butthole.
Yeah.
It's so awesome, you won't even believe it. Okay. I mean, seriously, you won't fucking believe how incredible it is.
I have to look at the thing on HBO. I've never heard of it before.
You have to be conversant in it.
Yeah.
Because the thing on HBO was good, but I can't imagine anybody that hadn't read the books liking it. I really can't.
Yeah. Well, speaking of geekery, you know why I played the Spinal Tap thing in the top of the show? I rarely mention when this happens, but this was like this is a banner day. The last week, it was actually the day before we were ready to do the show. I was going to talk about it last week, but the reason I played the Spinal Tap thing is because of Michael McKeon. Spinal Tap's David St. Hubbins is now following me on Twitter.
Nice.
Yeah. That was like one of those moments where I go, holy shit. Oh my God. David St. Hubbins is following me on Twitter. That's so cool.
I've tweeted at him a couple times in my celebrity stalking ways, but I don't believe he's ever responded. So
yeah,
maybe he's a fan of the show. Follow me, please. Mr. McKean.
And speaking of the show, I'm in the process of trying to bring the show to a larger audience. There's a couple bigger things in the works that I'm working on I'm reaching out to some people. First of all, the show will eventually be on Crooks and Liars. It seriously, seriously will. I mean, I've been talking about this for 6 months now, but it's eventually going to go. And so, you know, that will expand the audience. And then there's another format. There's like an entirely different format for presenting the show that I'm working on. I can't say what it is yet because I don't want to jinx it, but I'm working on it. Mm. I'm going to try to. I mean, we've been doing this for over a year now. It's time to expand a little bit, I think.
Yes.
But today on today's show, politically, we're going to talk about Dylan Radigan here in a second because I went off on that guy yesterday. He's the TV cable news version of William Shatner. We're going to talk about that in a minute. bunch of hypocrite wingnut stories that I want to detail. I think there are three of them from the past week or so. And then the BP oil spill 1 year later. Some interesting BP items. But Dylan Radigan this was unbelievable yesterday, had Andrew Breitbart on his show.
Oh, no.
Did you see this?
No.
And I think, okay, well, if Radigan's going to have... Now, we talked about Radigan before. I mean, the guy is like, extremely over the top. I mean, he's like... I've compared him before to that clip of Captain Kirk reciting the preamble to the Constitution. That's exactly what Dylan Radigan is like. And I perpetually call him Dilligan.
Dilligan.
I don't know why. It's a verbal tic. I call him Dilligan.
Dilligan.
Dilligan. I don't mean to, but it would be funny if I should.
Something about his face bothers me.
Everything is so emergency panic button-ish on that show. Yeah. I mean, he'll go to a story about the fucking royal wedding, which, by the way, MSNBC, stop it.
Yeah.
Stop.
Who gives a shit?
Stop. No one cares about the royal wedding.
No, really don't.
He'll somehow pull the story of the royal wedding around to, you know, Wall Street screwing the American people. You know, say, the conflation of Wall Street along with the White House and President Obama and Congress and the military-industrial establishment is screwing the world. And I was part of all of that just 3 years ago.
Right.
When I was at CNBC and screaming about buy, sell, buy, sell.
You know. Spaz.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what everyone forgets. Dylan Radigan was one of those guys on CNBC where everything.
So
was
he had
just,
Breitbart on. And
he had Breitbart on. And I want to play some of this interview with Breitbart because I thought that he was actually going to. I thought he was actually going to say something worthwhile to Breitbart, maybe challenge him a little bit. And I gave Dylan Radigan too much of the benefit of the doubt here. And what it turned out to be is it just turned out to be, you know, a 10-minute hand job.
Low job, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't believe it. I mean, nothing. It's like Dylan Radigan, you could tell that either Dylan Radigan was doing someone a favor or he just doesn't know.
Or Breitbart's got a tape on him.
Yeah.
Breitbart's going to turn out to be the new J. Edgar Hoover. I mean, he's just going to have shit on everybody.
But I mean,
terrorizing people because, oh my God, maybe he's got a tape of them saying something naughty.
Yeah. I mean, but this has been the trend with Radigan. I mean, he sits there every day on the show screaming as if something is going to happen in a matter of seconds to blow up the moon. The moon is going to explode in 3 seconds, and it's going to be Goldman Sachs' fault. I mean, that's the Dylan Radigan show every damn day. I mean, every day is panic button. So you think he's going to go after Andrew Breitbart? But no. I mean, listen.
All right, back now, breaking it down. Indignant, but not angry, excuse me. That is how controversial blogger Andrew Breitbart sees his place in the media world. And now all of America can try and read between the lines of Breitbart's new book. It is called Righteous Indignation, Excuse Me While I Save the World. Andrew Breitbart joins us now, and it's a pleasure to see you.
Thank you very much, Dylan.
What's the motivation behind this piece of literature?
Well, I think I am misunderstood out there in the media, and I think the reason why is, I mean, you've got this guy named Morgan Spurlock, and he decides that he's going to be...
I mean, this ends up turning out to be a 10-minute commercial for Breitbart's book. It's exactly what it is. I mean, it is a 10-minute commercial. And it's inexcusable.
You know, the Upton Sinclair of McDonald's and report on it and say that we've got a problem out here at McDonald's. Well, I'm kind of the Upton Sinclair of the mainstream media. And so I end up attacking people like you.
Sure.
And people are like, why are you doing this to me? And I think that
I'm the Upton Sinclair of the media. And I'm also suffering delusions of grandeur.
Mainstream media
talk about a punch me face.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, God. And it gets worse.
Unfair to the Tea Party since day one. And for some odd reason, I decided to become the defender of the Tea Party. And I started to take it quite personally.
What does that mean? For some odd reason, I've become the defender of the Tea Party.
That's his way of distancing himself from it ideologically.
For some odd reason. Let's say, so like he, like a donkey kicked him in the head and suddenly he's a defender of the Tea Party. Yeah. And so I guess if a donkey kicks him in the head again for some odd reason, he will stop defending the Tea Party. For some odd reason.
There were so many.
So weird. You know, I'm sorry. I'm just going to keep interrupting this and make it completely incoherent. But you know what? I think if you were to put a face to the insult of calling someone a douchebag, it would have to be this guy. I mean, this guy is sort of the definitive douchebag.
Where he's my go-to guy.
Well, so then what would you say your expertise is? Because I look at you and I see a smart man. I see an incredibly passionate and effective man. And I recognize that the media has been an incredibly robust and effective target for you.
Right.
But I look at you like a guy who's a sharpshooter who's good.
Yeah.
And he's up on the hill, and I'm like, why is he shooting over there?
And I'm also the Pied Piper. I'm more influenced in...
By the way, calling Breitbart a douchebag, you can bet that Lee Stranahan, who's now become sort of Andrew Breitbart's toady, will now be posting on Twitter and on his blog that I've used an ad hominem attack against Breitbart to try... I mean, that's what Stranahan was trying to do the other day on Twitter. He's trying to get me banned from the Huffington Post because I think at some point 2 years ago, I called Eric Cantor a wingnut or something like that.
Wow.
And used an ad hominem attack against someone. And so therefore I should be banned like Breitbart was. Because Breitbart was banned for taken away from the front page of the Huffington Post because he was calling Van Jones a racist or something like that.
Yeah.
And so then, you know.
Oh, Stranahan.
Stranahan.
You know, I was watching Firefly the other day, and the great Joss Whedon show that got shit canned. But Adam Baldwin is in that show, plays the best character in that show. So I thought, I wondered if Adam Baldwin was on Twitter, and I went to look, and he is. And the second I got into his Twitter stream, he's having a flame war with Stranahan.
What, really, Stephen Baldwin?
Yeah. Yeah, no, Adam Baldwin.
Adam Baldwin, yeah. Okay.
Who's not related to the brothers.
He's having a flame war with...
Stranahan. Yeah, he was going back and forth with Stranahan about Lee's disingenuousness and his, the way he plays with words and blah, blah, blah. It's just this whole thing. It's like, oh my God, Stranahan's even got Adam Baldwin.
And it's always the same argument. It's always that Stranahan is basically a troll. And we'll get, you know, the debate off into some weird tangent where you're debating semantics and you know, the accusation of straw man comes up at some point. You know, it's like one of those insufferable debates that never accomplishes anything and just turns into a debate about the tactics of the debate.
Yeah. No, that in fact, he uses, I'm going through his stream right now, he uses some of those exact words, the straw man and blah, blah, blah. That's absolutely the kind of stuff it was.
Right.
And I was just like, oh my God, Stranahan's just infected everyone with his bullshit.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, between both Stranahan and Breitbart, they're like birds of a feather. They're cut from the same cloth. They really are, because they use the same trollish behavior. All they do, you want to know everything you want to know about these guys is they're just trolling for reaction. They're taking a position because it's good for their career and their visibility.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's all you have to know. They're career opportunists. They have nothing to do with ideology. I get emails all the time. People saying, what happened to Stranahan? He went from being a liberal to he's defending Breitbart.
Yeah.
Stranahan is not anything. Stranahan is about Stranahan.
Breitbart
is not a liberal. He's not a conservative. He's Breitbart.
He's a Breitbartian.
He's a Breitbartian. Breitbart is all about Breitbart.
Yeah.
That's all you got to know.
Yeah.
He's a faker. He's a career opportunist.
And yeah, just like Trump. I mean, Trump's just all about Trump.
That's exactly right.
And this whole farce of his, this whatever the fuck he's doing, it's just a way to get the more camera pointed at him for free.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
That's right.
Trump's just about Trump.
So here's Radigan just stroking Breitbart.
And I respect your passion. I don't necessarily even have an interest in debating the issues. In other words, I think I understand why you want to do what you're doing.
I have no interest in actually discussing substance with you.
Right.
any more than I would Morgan Spurlock.
Yeah.
And McDonald's, that's where his passion is.
Right.
Your passion is where your passion is.
Uh-huh.
I guess my question is, if you look at the biggest problems that plague this country, a screwed up media that doesn't ask the right questions or do the right thing.
Jesus. I'm not going to debate you on substance. And oh, by the way, the media is really screwed up.
Nice.
Good just one, Dylan. There was a Twitter war between Breitbart and David Schuster over this yesterday. And here's
over the appearance.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, basically, Schuster called the called it a love-in. Called the Breitbart interview a love-in. So Radigan tweets regarding at Andrew Breitbart. I don't agree with many of his targets or methods. Schuster says, not enjoying the walk of shame after his love-in, talking about Dylan Radigan, basically getting ripped to shreds on Twitter. Radigan says, my purpose, confront Andrew about his and the Tea Party's failure to focus on the biggest problems, our bought polls and the oligarchy. Schuster to Dylan Radigan. Fine on question Breitbart about Tea Party not confronting oligarchy, but you also asked him about 2012, yet no time for charade? Radigan, I'm interested in going after the whales, the truly powerful actually causing the problems, bleeding USA, and questioning all who don't. Right?
What a cop-out.
Yeah.
But you're not talking. You're not inviting those people on your show to shit on them, Radigan. You've got this guy right there in your studio. What the fuck?
Yeah.
Let's go.
Then Schuster.
Oh, I may disagree with his methods, but he's a swell guy. He's an okay chap.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
Schuster to Radigan. What whales were you going after when you lavished praise on Breitbart, elevated him to pundit, and asked him about 2012?
Right.
Which is exactly right.
Yeah.
They
all just pander to each other and kiss each other's asses. The whole establishment media, the whole thing. It's just, hey, you got a book, come on this show, and we'll talk about it, and blah, blah, blah. There's no, I was watching this clip of fucking Dan Rather interviewing James Eastland, the old segregationist Mississippi senator, back in the fucking late 50s. It was an old black and white and there's Dan Rather, not Dan Rather, it's one of Mike Wallace. It was Mike Wallace.
Yeah.
Smoking a cigarette, black and white, like old as shit tape. And I mean, Mike Wallace was punishing that guy. I mean, just all up his ass, just wailing on him, on James Eastland, about his segregationism and about racial equality in the South. And I mean, Eastland was giving it back, but it was no kind of ass kissing. Mm. It was a grilling. I mean, back in those days, meet the press meant something, It means come here and meet the press. They're going to get up your ass.
Right.
It never happens anymore. It seems like everybody's backstage in the green room. Well, what are you going to talk about? Well, I've got these three things. Okay. I've got these four. Okay. It sounds like they shake hands, they go out and they do. Bop, bop, bop. It's pointless.
I mean, Breitbart admitted to tricking the media and, quite honestly, the American people with his James O'Keefe, the original James O'Keefe, Acorn videos.
Yeah.
And I mean, he admitted to selectively editing them. I mean, he literally said in public at a Tea Party rally, I tricked the media. I tricked you. I had to do something to get me noticed, so I tricked you. That, yeah. If Pee Wee Herman gets extricated from me, from all of media for 20 years because he masturbated in a porn theater, easily Breitbart should be banned from being taken seriously for lying to the public. And ultimately that lie ended up shutting down Acorn. And I don't know how many hundreds, if not thousands, of jobs were lost because of it. Mm-hmm. Because of Andrew Breitbart's ego and a big fraud that he and James O'Keefe committed on the American people and the American press.
Yep.
And he did it again with Shirley Sherrod. And he did it again with NPR. This is his MO. This is what he does. He's just a professional instigator. And people lose their job. Shirley Sherrod lost her job because of Breitbart's career.
Yep.
And that should get him disqualified from being taken seriously by anyone. He should not be allowed on Dylan Radigan's show to promote his book. I mean, it's, some people are ostracized from the press for bad behavior. So should Breitbart. I don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Meh.
But it's just it's a big cocktail party. It's all a big circle jerk.
That's right. That's right. That's what I just said. It's all, you know, it is all just a big circle jerk.
Right. And that's why Breitbart was on. Because he has friends who need to be jerked off by Dylan Radigan because Dylan Radigan is friends with those friends. And so we all lose, consequently.
Fair and balanced.
That's right. So, you know, Andrew Breitbart is allowed to continue to commit fraud. And is, in fact, is encouraged to do so because he's given a rep. He's given a positive reputation on television by Dylan Radigan, you know, vouching for him and saying he's a smart man. It's like Radigan a couple weeks.
I don't know too many people that are taking Dylan Radigan's word for anything. Like, I don't know how elevating being on that show is, really.
Well, it's elevating enough. I mean, just the very fact that, you know, you have a guy who has a show an hour a day, 5 days a week, with an audience saying that, you know, Andrew Breitbart is a smart man. I mean, what if you're a casual viewer and you don't follow the internet? You don't know that Andrew Breitbart committed a fraud. Barely anyone talks about it. Lee Stranahan didn't know about the goddamn I Tricked You video. And Lee Stranahan's, you know, Breitbart's right-hand man now. He's like Breitbart's PR agent. You know?
I don't know if they're that close.
Well, he didn't know. He didn't know. So how is an average MSNBC viewer going to know if Dylan Radigan doesn't say, here's this piece of video. I want to know why you committed fraud against the American people. I want to hold you accountable for all those jobs that were lost and getting Acorn shut down and all the people who are going to be disenfranchised because they don't have any sort of support in the inner cities to back them up when they go to vote.
Yeah, but then that if you do that to somebody like Breitbart, who's so plugged into the Tea Party, all you do is perpetuate the liberal media stereotype that you know, poor Breitbart can't go on the fucking news and promote his book because the liberal media crawl up his ass about something.
So we're just, yeah, I know.
You know, but I think it's more, you know, a pound of harm versus a couple ounces of, you know, circle jerkage.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're not going to do that, if you're not going to say that, then don't have him on.
Well, yeah.
I mean, you don't have Andrew Breitbart. You don't have a known scam artist on without asking him about holding him accountable for the scam.
Yeah. No, I agree with that.
You know, it's either have him on, hold him accountable, or don't have him on. Yeah.
Trying to determine if that's a dead mouse over there. Hang on. I don't know what the fuck that is. Yeah. There's something over there against the wall that very much looks like either a sleeping or a recently dead mouse.
Something that's dead.
Yeah. Well, that's good. And so I've been taking posters. I got all these movie posters down here. I'm down in the basement. And I've got all these. I've got the Raiders. I've got the Indiana Jones quadrology posters. And then I got the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And then I got Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And I've been stacking them up against the wall. And underneath, and I'm pretty sure the wall along the baseboard there was clean when I propped those posters up, and now there's something.
Catch
looks
it.
Like it's either a mouse or a very large jalapeno pepper.
It's a catch it, is what it is.
I can't. No, there's no cats in the house. There are no cats in the house.
So
I'll have to check that out.
Republican hypocrites. I mean, this seems like a very broad topic, but there are some specific stories here that came up this week that simply illustrates the fact that these guys have no idea what the hell they're doing. I mean, you know, Rick Perry is the guy who is the governor of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And
does a damn fine job down there.
Famously said that, you know, he would entertain the idea of secession. It's really unbelievable. These guys are, again, you know, talk about some people who aren't to be taken seriously, like Andrew Breitbart, but I mean the entire Republican Party, they just don't know. I don't know if they're just morons or they're just being deliberately stupid. I mean, Rick Perry is so angry and dissatisfied with any sort of federal government interference in the state of Texas, whether it's the stimulus or anything else. but they've got these wildfires. I mean, it's just, and 7,800 fires and burning 1.5 million acres. 244 nice. Families have lost their homes.
Ooh.
Threatened more than 8,500 others. Governor Perry
needs some
says
help, does he?
Texas is reaching its capacity to respond to so many emergencies. And so he says, I believe the federal government has become a he's actually looking for federal funds and emergency management to come in and help him with the fires.
Right, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And meanwhile,
that's what they do.
Yeah, and he has said in the past, I believe the federal government has become oppressive. I believe it's become oppressive in its size, its intrusion in the lives of its citizens, and its interferences with the affairs of our state.
Yeah, unless we invite them to interfere.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. That's it goes back to that Bartlett speech. It's, you know, the Texas didn't win World War II. Sometimes we're all in it together. Sometimes the massive socialism contributes to a deep, you know, a fund that where we pay for emergency management services to come in and put fires out and rescue people from fucking hurricanes and floods and whatnot.
Yeah.
Douchebags. Really? So yeah, I'd say, hey, enjoy your fires there, Perry. Send you a bucket of water and a, you know, blanket you can stop, drop, and roll.
Texas also got $830 million in federal aid under the recent budget compromise for the remainder of 2011. Texas, Governor Rick Perry is allowed to brag that he's balanced the Texas budget because, you know, he received stimulus money. And that helped him balance the budget.
And balanced it on the back of, you know, slashing education to the point where Texas is one of the stupidest states in the union. Yeah. I mean, it's one of the ass-backwardest states in the whole country.
Right. So, I mean, if he wants to secede and he wants, you know, states' rights, you don't want any federal government. You know, I'd like my money. I'd like my share back. You know, yeah. Quote President Bartlett, can we have it back, please?
Right. I'll take my $3.80.
I mean, you can't.
I'm pretty sure Texas is one of those states that's underwater as far as what it, you know, what it takes versus what it pays back.
Right.
Pretty sure it's one of the high underwater ones. Like, you know, Massachusetts, you know, they call it, ooh, Taxachusetts, but they actually, you know, they only take like 60 cents on the dollar, and Texas is like $1.80.
That's right. Yeah. Alaska, I think, pays for every dollar it pays out in federal income taxes, it gets back, you know, $1.50 in federal money.
Oh, it's the worst. Alaska's the worst.
Yeah. I think it's even higher than that. I want to say it's like $1.80.
And most, the biggest socialist state in the country.
Right. So, I mean, the nerve, it's just, it's unbelievable that these guys are allowed to get away with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so the next thing is, you know, Tea Party people, as you're well aware, are very, well, let's say that they don't like socialism.
No, they don't care for it.
Right. They don't like.
They're worried about it.
Right. They want to cut the budget. You know, the debt is huge. Well, what's the lion's share of the debt? What's the lion's share of the federal budget deficit? It's Medicare.
Entitlements. Medicare. Medicaid, Social Security. Defense. Yeah.
Well, latest Marist poll asks the question, do you support or oppose doing each of the following to deal with the federal budget deficit? Cut Medicare and Medicaid. Among self-identified Tea Party supporters, 70% opposed cuts to Medicare and Medicaid.
It's because, have you seen these rallies? They're all on it.
Yeah.
I mean, they're mostly old people, old, insane people. Mm-hmm. With nothing better to do on an afternoon than listen to Glenn Beck on the radio and then walk over, you know, 20 feet to the couch and watch Fox News for the rest of the night.
So where is the cognitive dissonance here? There, because on one hand, you've got Tea Party people screaming about the deficit by voting because of the debt, because of the national debt, which for 8 years, no one even said the words national debt.
Yeah.
It never was a topic. Until Barack Obama became president.
Yeah.
So the national debt, they're voting based on the debt, you know, and just screaming about cutting the size of government. And then they say, keep your government hands off my Medicare, not realizing. Maybe that's it. They just don't realize. They just don't know.
I think they do. I think they just want I think they just feel entitled to it. They were the greatest generation. They worked for it. They worked hard. They had their jobs and their lives, and that's hey, that's they paid into it. That's their money. They want it, goddammit. I think they know it's government. They just hey, they're entitled to it. That's why they call them entitlement programs.
At the same time, all at once, while opposing 70%, 73% of self-identified Republicans oppose those cuts. Yeah. But at the same time, they support Paul Ryan's ridiculous budget plan that voucherizes, I don't even know if this is a real word, but voucherizes Medicare. Basically says,
they don't know that, though. They don't know. They just think the Paul Ryan thing is just a gift from God. They don't know anything that's in it. Yeah. When you pull out the Ryan stuff individually, it's a stinker. It stinks on ice.
Yeah.
Nobody likes that fucking plan. When you pull it out individually, I mean, taken as a whole, people are like, oh, look at him. He's got those sad, mournful eyes, and he's got a budget. Ooh.
Part of the problem is that, once again, I believe the press and, to a certain extent, Republicans, members of Congress themselves, mistake volume and loudness for popular support.
Yeah.
It's not about actual polling. Because if it was about actual polling, we'd have a public option. Because the public option was hugely popular. It was just the people screeching at the town halls helped to eliminate the public option. And then you have these Medicare cuts and these budget cuts that people across the board oppose. People are opposed to cutting all of these programs individually. When you say, should we reduce the deficit and cut the budget? When you say that, ask that broad question, they say, well, yes, we should. Well, then what should we cut? Should we cut this or that? No.
Right.
We don't cut anything except foreign aid, which is like the one half of 1% of the budget.
Yeah.
But so what it is, you have these Tea Party people screaming, and you have Fox News Channel and talk radio screaming about these topics that we need to cut all these programs. And that screaming is mistaken for popular support. It's like the actual details of the poll, of these poll questions and poll responses, are ignored because the screaming is just louder.
Yeah. Yeah. They're all about cognitive dissonance. Yeah. There's no straight line between what they think and what their policy. They're just all politics. They're no policy. Yeah. It's just loud noises and, you know, get in there and do this. And if you don't, I'll vote you out. And it becomes completely impossible for these. I feel sorry for some of these freshman Republicans. I mean, they just cannot toe this line that they got voted in for. Yeah. And it's going to be chaos.
Yeah.
In 2 years and 4 years.
Well, yeah. And I think that also contributes. I mean, the Republicans are already not very serious people. They're very marketing PR oriented. Their policies, their positions are basically detailed by what can fit onto a bumper sticker. They're not actual positions that are thought out using research and actual empirical reality. It's just stuff that sounds good when said on television in under 10 seconds. Or in what
well,
is it? How many words?
It's that words. And that it's that and then it's just an enormous immovable ideology that you can cling to the ideology, but then when it gets down, the ideology is this huge mountain. When it gets down to the nitty-gritty of actually plugging policy into that massive ideology, it just becomes completely impossible. Mm-hmm. So they just look to us like retards, but to them, they're just being ideologically pure.
Yeah,
this is my ideology and I must stick to it, even though it breaks in a billion different ways when you try to apply it to policy.
Yeah,
it's they just can't see past the ideological blinders, and we Democrats just don't seem to have that problem.
Right. And, you know, and so like the Republicans are paying legal counsel $500 an hour for legal counsel, $500 an hour. This is the House Republicans in order to defend the Defense of Marriage Act.
I mean, what money is that? Where does that come from?
That's coming from the congressional budget.
Oh, wow. So public monies.
Yeah.
Hmm. That, I didn't vote for that.
Yeah. House Republicans are paying outside counsel $500,000 to uphold the Defense of Marriage Act.
Nice. It's go do it.
Unfucking believable.
$500,000 to prevent people from hooking up.
Yeah.
So, preventing people from loving on each other.
So because the feedback is so skewed between what they're screaming, cut the budget. Cut the budget. Cut the size of government. But, oh, yeah, by the way, don't touch Medicare. Don't touch Social Security. Don't touch anything because we support all of these programs individually.
Yeah.
You know, it's creating all of this confusion, right, which makes an already confused political party even more confused. So you get guys like Eric Cantor, who's the House Majority Leader. He's just not some he's not some low-ranking Republican in the House of Representatives. He's the Majority Leader. He's second in command to John Boehner. So you have Eric Cantor, who's legislating James O'Keefe videos, you know, who's trying to defund NPR because James O'Keefe and Andrew Breitbart selectively edited a video. You know, it's still one of their ridiculous sting videos, their jackass sting videos. Then he's proposing ridiculous legislation. If you vote on this legislation, we pass this bill in the House, it not only becomes automatically law, but it also makes another bill, an appropriations bill, law as well.
Mm-hmm.
Completely circumventing every, you know, bit of reality in the world. Yeah. And then the other morning, and this enraged me, and it shouldn't anymore. It should. Yeah. I just should not get bent out of shape by this anymore. But and it's not so much the act of doing it, but it's the how it's just ignored. Is Eric Cantor used in an official statement? It wasn't like he did this; it was a slip of the tongue in an interview. But he used the pejorative or the epithet "Democrat Party."
Oh yeah,
in an official statement. This is the House Majority. Can you imagine if Harry Reid called the Republicans the Repugs? Mm-hmm. Or if Harry Reid, in an official statement, used the little dollar sign instead of the S in the word Bush?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
I think Cantor, I look at Cantor and I really think that guy's so gumped out. Like, he's just so mentally retarded. There's really something wrong with Eric Cantor. He just looks and talks like a fucking idiot. I don't think he knows that Democrat Party is pejorative. I don't think no one has ever told him that. He's just stupid, stupid, stupid. Mm-hmm. Really, just look at him. He just looks like a gimp, like a simpleton. Just a gimp.
Yeah.
His brain.
I think he knows just because he's been told. And so there, I think the gumpishness comes out with like, okay, run, Forrest, run. Okay. In this case, he said, okay, yeah, you know, Eric, use Democrat Party because it pisses off people. And it's insulting to the Democrats, which are, you know, the name of the party is the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
So it should be Democratic legislation, Democratic candidates, Democratic votes,
Senate,
Democratic Senate,
Democratic White House,
And not Democrat Senate or not Democrat Party, because that's you know, it was invented by Frank Luntz to insult Democrats and to emphasize the rat ending.
Is that why? I don't even know why, how they got started.
Well, it wasn't actually. It was popularized in the 80s again by Frank Luntz, but it was started back in the 60s. You know, the sort of the uprising of the Republicans in reaction to Barry Goldwater getting spanked, them trying to reinvent themselves, repair their party after the 64 election. So they came up with this Democrat ridiculousness as a way to
just a really stupid slur. I mean, it's never really bothered me. It just the person saying it just sounds like a fucking idiot.
Yeah, it was like a subliminal thing. It's like we're stripping them of the ability to associate themselves with Democratic small d. Plus we're also emphasizing the rat ending, you know, which is why they use it. So that's why
serious
every Republican. Yeah, that's exactly right. It's no different than a blogger or a commenter on a blog, you know, saying Bush with the dollar sign instead of the S, or saying Republicans or whatever the epithet is.
Mike
Huckabee. Exactly right. But no,
it's name calling. It's just childish ridiculous name calling.
Which is fine for, you know, for people having a debate on a discussion board or in the comments of a blog, but it's not fine. I would be pissed off if anyone from the White House used that, or if anyone in Democratic leadership, or any democratically elected official from the Democratic Party using anything like that. I mean, suddenly Harry Reid or Nancy Pelosi or someone like that said repugs, or that would piss me off because it's unserious and childish. For they should be held to a higher standard.
Right. Yeah, it'd piss me off too.
Yeah. But here is the House Majority Leader saying Democrat. He's actually said the actual quote from the statement was Democrat candidate.
Mm.
Which is incorrect. It's Democratic. But see, it's not so much that really pisses me off. It's that they're just continuously allowed to get away with it. They should not be taken seriously anymore. If a Republican says that, they should be written off. And not in, and things that they say subsequent to that should not be held in any sort of esteem whatsoever.
Yeah.
Because they have proved themselves to be unserious actors, unserious characters on the national stage.
But their constituent, but they reflect and represent their constituents, and those people are giggly, Dorito eating buffoons. I mean, sorry, the audience for that are the kind that slap their knee and hoot and holler and giggle up a storm when they hear that on their TV machine.
Yeah.
They go, "Oh, Eric Cantor, you sure got one over on them good that way." That it works for them.
Yeah. But then, you know, and
I don't take them seriously. You don't, and most of the people, you know, that we like don't. But the constituents do. The constituents think they're fighting the good fight because they're super duper serious constituents as well.
But again, what it comes down to, though, is that, you know, the press is completely hamstrung. They cannot. Their hands are tied. They cannot. They cannot call this shit out. Why? Because they're self-conscious. They're self-conscious about the liberal media bullshit. So therefore, they can't. They're not allowed to say anything.
Right. You know, that's what I was saying with Dylan Renegan, with the fucking circle jerk. That's the whole point. They're terrified of any perceived bias, so they can't go after stuff like that. Plus, there's nothing sexy or newsworthy about having. I mean, because you just. If the news were calling them out on it, they'd have to have this conversation. We just had to have to explain it and what it means. People just nod off in the middle of that. They'd be like, I don't listen to
this. No, it's not a matter of.
About fucking royal wedding, for Christ's sake.
Yeah. Well, it's not a matter of calling them out. It's just a matter of just writing them off as being unserious people.
Well, you can't.
And saying that this guy is a clown.
He's the majority, the House Majority Leader. He can't be written off. You got to point a microphone at him. I mean, the ones that are getting written off now, if you see that tweet from What's-Her-Face, the broad that runs the Sarah Palin media empire, you know, bitching at the Washington Post about ignoring her speech the other day in Okeechobee, where the fuck she was. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, really? Now we're worried about the lamestream media suddenly the lamestream media coverage is important when there's no coverage. That's who's getting written off. I mean, Sarah Palin suddenly just kind of dropped off the map.
Yeah.
Media coverage wise. And that boy, that nothing, you know, nothing's worse. You know, the only thing worse for Sarah Palin than media coverage is no media coverage.
Well, I was told by someone in the know that there was an unofficial sort of backroom agreement among different cable news networks and newspaper editors to not talk about Sarah Palin for 90 days.
Yeah,
and that didn't work.
No, didn't work at all.
No, they couldn't do it. Couldn't get away with that one. But I mean, what I'm saying is, if they're not willing to be serious people, I mean, legislators, members of Congress,
I agree with the thought.
They shouldn't. They shouldn't be allowed to go on Morning Joe, for example, and their views being taken seriously. Everything should be viewed through the prism of this guy is a clown. Just like with Donald Trump, everything that Donald Trump says should be viewed through the prism of this guy being a PR stunt clown. And so when someone like Joe Scarborough or Mika Brzezinski says you know what? Eric Cantor is one of the smart Republicans, or Paul Ryan is one of the smart ones. He's one of the ones we should take seriously. Why? Because, I don't know. Yeah. This doesn't make any sense to me, because clearly the record shows that he's not a serious player. He's using Democrat Party and proposing ridiculous legislation and legislating James O'Keefe videos.
Yeah.
That doesn't make him a serious man, but it's only because they say they've got a, you know, both sides are unserious, so no one's unserious. Right. Or because, you know, they don't want to be accused of being, MSNBC doesn't want to be accused of being a liberal network, so we have to give him time.
Right.
Yeah. That's just hurting, you know, to quote Jon Stewart, it's hurting America. Yeah. That's what Jon Stewart said when he was on
Crossfire
and basically killed that show.
He did.
He said to them, you are hurting America, and that's exactly what it is.
Yeah. Tucker Carlson and that other guy.
Yeah. I mean, Rachel Maddow's been doing a fantastic job. I mean, basically on MSNBC saying MSNBC is doing it wrong.
Yeah.
He's saying the Washington media, or I think she calls it the D.C. media, is not covering Michigan. They're not covering the fact that Michigan can now eliminate local municipalities altogether. Yeah. Just eliminate the local governments and put in place a czar, basically what amounts to a financial czar. The Republican governor can now create a czar, which Republicans evidently hate. Yeah, so she's able to call. No one in the D.C. media is covering Michigan and what's happening out there, because it's not a D.C. story. It's happening way out there in that state that looks like a mitten.
Right.
So therefore, it's unimportant. But it's critically important, because not only is it hypocritical, because, you know, it's basically, can you imagine if Barack Obama, if President Obama suddenly said, you know what? Texas is having financial problems, and instead of giving them stimulus money to balance their budget, Rick Perry, you hypocritical douche, we're going to eliminate the entire Texas state legislature and the Texas governor and replace it with a czar. Can you imagine how that would be met? How the AM talk radio and Fox News channel and the Republican blogs would just explode.
But as long as it's an anti-union movement, as long as it has to do with slashing budgets and being fiscally responsible, no one gives a shit.
Yeah. So if it's the Michigan governor, the Republican governor, eliminating the I think it's the community of, is it called Bayshore?
I don't know.
I forget the name of the
No one's covering it, so I hadn't seen anything about it.
That's right.
I mean, really. The states are just eating themselves alive, it seems like. Ohio, Michigan, there's just Florida, Texas. It seems to be some serious uprisings going on.
Yeah, right.
Some serious trouble.
Yeah.
In states.
Oh, God. So, you know, so it's not, so crap like that's not being covered, so we can talk about Trump's birther.
Yeah, he's serious.
Nonsense.
He's a clown. He knows he's a clown. It's all about getting his face on TV without having to pay for it. You know, more power to him. If he gets a nomination, I will just laugh and laugh.
There's no difference between what Breitbart is doing with what Trump is doing.
No.
It's all, you know,
theater.
Yeah, it's all masturbation.
The absurd. Yep.
It's a big ongoing circle jerk, and it's. It's hurting America.
But America's too stupid to know it. So
that's right. But let's talk about some lovely soap, because it's Easter is coming up. And you want to go to Bubble Genius. The exclusive sponsor of this here podcast is www.bubblegenius.com. You can follow them on Twitter at Bubble Genius. They're very entertaining on Twitter, and you can hear about all of their latest inventions.
Yep.
They're delicious soaps, but don't eat them because they're not really edible. They just smell wonderful. They've got their My Ass Hurts Easter gift pack. Available now for purchase at Bubble Genius. It's a couple of soaps that are shaped like chocolate bunnies with two Easter eggs and little chocolate or a little soapy flowers in Easter grass in a decorative basket. And smells delicious, feels delicious in your hands.
Yep.
Yeah. They've also got their Hippity Hoppity Easter gift pack. By the way, those My Ass Hurts Easter gift pack. The reason is the ass hurts because there's a bite taken out of the chocolate bunnies.
Yeah. Ears and ass both.
And when I first saw that, you know what I thought it was all about? I thought the joke was with My Ass Hurts? It was that the Easter bunny lays those giant Easter eggs. And that's why the ass hurts, because it's laying eggs. But then there's the normal Easter bunny without the ass eaten away. That's also in the Hippity Hoppity Easter gift pack. $15 at Bubble Genius. And here comes Peter Chocolate Tail Easter Bunny Soap. Life sure can get wearisome for a bunny who's been out delivering eggs all day, and it ain't easy finding decent hiding places, especially in those minimalist mid-century modern homes. You try hiding an Easter egg in a neutron. I don't know. I don't even know what that is. You know what that is? So it's nice to come home and have a nice soak in the tub with a favorite bar of soap, and that's there. Particular bunny measures 5 inches by 2 inches, weighs a little over 2 ounces of soap, looks and smells just like chocolate, but don't eat it. For God's sake, don't eat it, because it'll taste like soap.
But no surfactants.
No surfactants whatsoever. Bubble Genius brings you soap and body products like you've never seen before. They've got something for everyone, from guys to girls to kitties to expectant mothers and even your dogs. And my dog is now staring at me. Bubble Genius strives to be good to your skin while also being good to the planet. Most of their packaging is recyclable. They source their ingredients as close to home as possible, thereby supporting other local and domestic businesses while cutting down on fossil fuel consumption by not having shipped from across the globe. They do their best to use organic ingredients when they're accessible and affordable, and their soaps are free of chemical detergents and surfactants. By the way, if you want to get a 15% discount on your entire order, enter the promo code Bob and Elvis, B-O-B-A-N-D-E-L-V-I-S, at www.bubblegenius.com.
The Bob and Elvis Show.
So after 2 weeks off, wrapping up another show.
Yep. It's late here on the Farm of Doom.
Is it very? Yeah, it's getting to be, what, 9:30-ish there?
8 till 10.
8 till 10. Have you had anything to drink tonight?
No, I'm not drinking anymore.
You're not? Oh, so you quit drinking again.
Yeah, well, I went on the only thing that helps me lose weight ever is low, almost non-existent carbs and high protein, so... When I do that, I go to full purge mode. You know, one cup of coffee and nothing but water for the beverages and massive amounts of protein and so no alcohol. So yeah, but and I'm right in the the stage where your blood sugar's just in the toilet and you've got no energy because you've got no carbs, and pretty soon it's gonna kick over and I'll start burning. I'll start burning fat instead of carbs, and my blood sugar will even out, and I'll be much better. But right now, I'm like, just kicking me in the ass.
You know, best way to lose weight, get on a bike.
Yes, yes, but I live off a fucking highway, and biking is really inconvenient.
Well, so you've got that all the great, like, get yourself a mountain bike. I mean, you've got, I mean, the farm.
I've got a mountain bike.
You've got a mountain bike.
It's no fun and a pain in the ass to have to load it in the car and drive it into town and then just fucking drive around town. There's just nowhere to bike around here.
Well, what I'm saying is with a mountain bike, it's meant to be, you're meant to use it across terrain like you would have there at the Farm of Doom, is what I'm saying.
Well, that's not fun. The Farm of Doom goes straight up a hill at about a 12 degree. I mean, it's straight up.
Right.
And not biking up that. It's hard enough to fucking walk up there. As soon as it's been a shitty, cold, freezing cold, rainy, cold weather lately. Yeah. So it hadn't even been biking weather. But yeah, that's phase two. Once I get my blood sugar balanced out and I actually have enough energy to lift like more than a pencil, I'm going to start lifting again. I'm going to start getting the, you know, I got to start producing some muscle mass to burn more fat. So yeah. I'm dead serious about it this time. I'm not falling back off this wagon.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I always talk about bike riding as being a great way to drop. I mean, I lost 50 pounds.
Really?
Bike riding, yeah. Yeah, but I'm kind of fanatical about it. So it's not.
Well, no, I know you are. I mean,
your results are not guaranteed.
Special, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But
I've been, you know, doing this for 2.5 weeks. I've already dropped 12 pounds. So,
oh,
I mean, it's unbelievable how fast it works, but
yeah,
it just fucks with your body chemistry. And after a time you start feeling better, but for the right now, it's just like, oh, just want to go to bed at like 6 o'clock. You just have no energy. It's just your blood sugar. You just, and you just so want a carbohydrate. Your just body's just crying out for a carb.
Yeah.
But then you go upstairs and get on the scale and you're like, hey, look at that.
Well, that's encouraging. Yeah, isn't it?
Dropped a pound and a half overnight. Yeah, it is. It is encouraging. It's great. Clothes start to fit again and everything. So, yeah. And I'm going to need to be at fighting weight to pack the whole Pharmadoom up and get the fuck out of here. So
to Iowa, yeah.
Yep.
Exciting.
Yay.
Well, a year ago today was the explosion of the Deepwater Horizon oil rig in the Gulf of Mexico. And then what happened to all that oil? Where did all that oil go?
Where's the oil? Evaporated.
Yeah, it just went away.
There's no problem. It all turned out fine.
It was like chocolate mousse.
Yeah. Even the guys who died in the fire are fine now. They're all alive and well and doing fine.
So a year later, BP plans to cut its overall tax bill by nearly $13 billion. By writing off costs related to last year's mammoth oil spill. As the Gulf Coast continues to grapple with the devastating environmental and economic costs of the disaster 1 year later. International oil giants suffered $40.9 billion losses as a result of the oil spill, making its net losses for 2010 a total of $4.8 billion, according to its annual report filed with the Securities and Exchange Commission and announced by several tax experts consulted by TPM, Talking Points Memo. Under U.S. corporate law, companies can take credits on top of 35% of their losses. In this case, that means U.S. taxpayers are indirectly subsidizing at least part of the cost for the cleanup and the $20 billion fund BP created to compensate people.
Awesome.
So, you know.
I was just feeling like I hadn't done enough for big oil.
So that's right. So what happens is BP had a $36.1 billion profit, and then you subtract the $40.9 billion loss. Makes a total of a $4.8 billion loss.
Mm. Poor dears.
Yeah.
How will they ever recover? So they basically write that there's a credit, a tax credit in there because of that loss, which means we end up paying for it. So that's
right.
Awesome.
Yeah. So they reduced their tax burden by nearly $13 billion.
Oh, thank God. Thank God. Who will look after BP? If not the tax-paying citizens of the United States. And it's a British company, by the way. Yeah. The B stands for British.
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome.
Meanwhile, there's been no legislation about offshore drilling, not a single thing. The New Orleans Times-Picayune reports that 101 oil spill-related bills were introduced in the 111th Congress, which came to a close in 2010. Exactly zero were enacted into law.
Wow.
Another 15 have been introduced so far this year, none of which have been acted upon by its committee of jurisdiction. Well, of course, because the Republicans are now in control. And so
if
there's
only
even less.
Big oil could get themselves some political clout. Mm-hmm. If only they had somebody looking after them in Congress.
That's right.
Big oil. Poor dears.
Poor big oil.
I'm going to go take my truck down to the BP place in town and fill up with some of the good stuff.
Right.
Give her a treat.
Meanwhile, BP, the oil giant responsible, is from Reuters. The oil giant responsible for the worst oil spill in U.S. history came close to winning a safety award from lobby group Oil and Gas UK on Wednesday.
Yeah, I heard about that.
So close. While it lost out, BP still won praise for its enthusiasm and commitment to offshore safety.
Except for the part where the guys got blowed up.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Not so much that part.
Unbelievable, the ass backwards world we live in. Meanwhile,
yeah, I mean, if there's no outrage for that, I mean, this is the world we live in. There's no rioting. There's no outrage. But it's just, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Big oil.
Right.
Fucked us again.
Yeah, fucked us again. 209 billion gallons or whatever it is of oil spilled into the Gulf. And it's just, what are you going to do?
We lose. Yeah, that's
yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Transocean Limited gave its top executives bonuses for achieving the best year in safety performance in their company's history, despite the explosion of its oil rig that killed 11 people and spilled 200 million gallons of oil into the Gulf of Mexico.
Nice.
Yeah. But they get...
The reason they gave that award, because the top of the derrick didn't shoot up into space and impale like the International Space Station.
Yeah,
it didn't do that, so they're awesome.
It didn't bash God in the balls.
Right, right. The thing didn't explode and impale a child through the eye that was eating a lovely ice cream cone.
That's right. It's just, oil spill? Whoops.
A couple dead guys. Well, they had all their dead guys all at once. Usually Transocean, they kill a couple every month across 12 months. This time they just got 8 or whatever it was, 13 in one shot.
So Transocean, the owners of the rig that was being leased by BP, gave its top executives bonuses for achieving this is, quote, best year in safety performance in our company's history.
Right, which really makes you want to go back and look at their track record.
The company said in a regulatory filing that its most senior managers were given 2/3 of their total possible safety bonuses.
Nice.
Yeah. So, you know, you really have to ask the question, what would it actually take for there to be serious legislation restricting offshore oil drilling, to come up with some sort of alternative to fossil fuels? I mean, what does it actually take?
I've told you. I don't know. Godzillaism.
Godzilla. That's right. The oil rig would have to explode and hit God in the balls.
Yeah. But even then, they'd be like, whoops. God can take a shot in the nuts every now and then.
Whoops, yeah.
God made the oil.
Right.
He made the lovely, delicious oil.
Exactly.
Just accidentally put a shit ton of it under Muslim control.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy Muslims.
It was just, it would be something that would be on America's Funniest Videos. Hilarious. Yeah. A god just got racked in the balls by an oil rig. But
he's got a sense of humor.
He's a good guy. He's a good guy. He can take it.
He's on our side after all.
Right, right.
Unbelievable. Lovely white Christian god.
Mm-hmm.
His long flowing beard. He's on our side.
So, he loves America. Right. So everyone gets bonuses, BP, gets tax credits, and the rest of us are just the Gulf of Mexico, giant ocean of oil still hovering around under the water there, but, dead dolphins washing ashore.
Mm.
And it's just,
just imagine like an American Airlines pilot or Delta, a pilot and a co-pilot. They're in their plane. They're drunker than fuck. Mm-hmm. They crash the plane. The cockpit pops off. Everybody on the plane dead.
Yeah.
And Delta gives those two guys bonuses and safety awards because, hey, they're alive. Good job, guys.
And then they run an ad campaign saying, whoops, we fucked up, but we're doing everything we can. I'm sorry.
Yeah. That wouldn't cause any outrage.
No, not at all.
No.
But, as soon as one of those guys writes a book, they can appear on the Dylan Radigan show. Like T. Boone Pickens, who financed the Swift Boat Veterans. He can go on Dylan Radigan and be called a true patriot.
Patriot, yeah.
For attacking a decorated Vietnam War veteran.
Who we now hate.
And Breitbart can go on there and he can be a smart, passionate man. who's like a sniper. He's up there. He's like Upton Sinclair.
Oh, he's so not.
God.
Upton Sinclair.
I don't know what the tipping point is going to be. Honestly, I don't. I don't know what it's going to take to set everything straight. And we were debating on Twitter. I think Shock was like, "Well, what are we going to do? We got to do something serious." Well, I mean, I think just by screaming at them on Twitter, they read that stuff. So I think it's important to just keep RTing them and saying what we need to say to them, because they do read it. They do take it seriously, at least to that extent. No, so they don't take it seriously.
But at least it's a squad of interns. They don't read shit.
I don't know. We can at least try to shame them and hopefully it'll reach critical mass and something will happen. That's my fantasy. That's my delusion. Well, hey, we'll be back next week at this time. We're going to commit to a regular time is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
We're going to try. Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely. You fudge with us. You fudge with the best. We shall be back next week. Take care, everybody.
Goodbye.
Internet? I'd say internet.